And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello, everyone. Today is October 4th. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm here with Darren. I'm here with Kevin. We're going to talk to you guys about sports tonight. Listen to us anywhere you get your podcast. Please like and subscribe. Hit that button. We need you to hit that button. Follow us on Facebook. Talk to us. We are picking games. We are putting comments out there. We want everybody to talk back to us when you get a chance. We're going around the world of sports tonight. That's right. Gone are the days of the flying saucers. We are in full sports mode right now. We got some NFL. We got some college football. We got Ryder Cup. We got baseball. Yankees and Mets seasons are over. Playoffs have started. Two teams have already advanced. NFL week four is done. It's in the books. That's where we're going to start. We got losses again for the Jets and Giants. This is not the season going the way we thought it would. Jets and Giants both at 1-3 to start week five. We're going to start it off with the Jets. They lose to Kansas City 23-20. They fall to 1-3. Kansas City's up 17-0 after the first quarter. The Jets fight back all game. They come up short in the end. That's where we start. Kev, take it away.
Wow, it felt like the Jet offensive coaches listened to our podcast last week. I mean, no, Darren and I last week talked about it. We needed a better offensive line play. We got it. They gave Zach time to throw. I think it was a combination. The play calling was a lot better. Zach was much more decisive. He dropped back, hit that back foot, release. So I think it's a combination that he was getting the ball out a little quicker, makes the offensive lineman block better because they don't have to hold the blocks for 4 or 5 seconds while Zach is trying to figure out what to do. So I think it's a combination there. How did they help Zach? What'd you see? Play action passing. You saw two tight ends in there to give him some extra blocking at times. You saw a sweep or two to Gibson. You know, try to use a little bit of speed. They changed up the offense a little bit and gave Zach a chance to play well, and he did. And I'm not saying he put up an MVP performance. He wasn't great. He wasn't spectacular. But he played like an NFL quarterback for one of the few times we have ever seen in his career. If this is the Zach Wilson we have going forward, carry it over to next week against Denver. This is a Zach Wilson that can win games for the Jets and keep them in the playoff hunt. Darren, any thoughts on the offense first?
Well, yeah, before we get into everything, Zach was good. He wasn't great, but he was good. The fumble hurt. Let's not take away the big negative he had. But, I mean, he missed a couple of throws early. My daughter's home, so the dog is barking. I apologize. Missed a couple of throws early, but for the most part, I thought he really played well. Loved the scramble on the two-point conversion. Loved seeing that little hustle. Feel like the flea flicker that was going to go for a big play. And for some reason, I don't think Zach dropped deep enough on that. Him and Dalvin looked like they were right on top of each other, and it didn't look like it was a natural flip. I think if he would have gave himself another 2 yards, he probably would have had a little release. He got the ball downfield. Lazard was actually a factor in the game. All three tight ends played well. Ruckert was involved. He had a nice pass to Uzomah. Conklin had the most catches, second most catch on the team behind Garrett Wilson, who they targeted a ton, which is what you want to see. They had men in motion, which I've been asking for since week one, just to kind of freeze the defense for a second. Dalvin Cook, I just don't think we need him anymore. I know they announced today that Breece is going to no longer have a pitch count, so to speak. But the way Dalvin Cook runs is he runs 10 carries for 12 yards, and then he breaks one for 40. But if he's not going to get all those carries, it's not going to work out. You almost would rather see the rookie. You'd rather see Izzy play because the fact of the matter is that we signed him in case Breece didn't come back, but Breece is back, and he broke a long one this week. So I was pretty impressed with what we saw. Overall on the offensive side of the ball, pretty impressed with the comeback. I mean, listen, Gino, you'll be the first to point out, Zach is not a great quarterback, but he looked like he was an NFL quarterback this week. He looked like he was a lower middle-of-the-pack quarterback. He wasn't Darren, a god, but he was okay.
That's what we need, an NFL-caliber quarterback. That's what we need to be right now.
Are you going to get that week after week is going to be the question. You're going to see. Yep. I get it. Hey, listen, for 1 week, he looked like he can play. Okay.
And now, right, if he doesn't do well against Denver, this is all for naught.
Yep.
He has to play well against Denver. He has to. If he does not bounce back against a defense that's been mostly Swiss cheese all year, Dolphins put up 70. Fields looked like a god for most of the game last week. If he doesn't do this, then we have a problem. But if he can play adequate football, minimize the turnovers, stuff like that, we can win the game the rest of the way, I think.
That's exactly where I was going to go, Darren. You beat me to the punch, which is if he's ever going to have a second game like this, this is the game he's got to come out and show it right now, because otherwise whatever he did this week is gone. So you're right, 100%. And listen, it's not going to get easier after that. So this is the game he's got to at least come out and prove that he can at least play. And then 2 weeks from now,
Philly.
When 2 weeks from now, when they have Philly at home, even if he's half a disaster, at least you're okay. You say, all right, listen, we've seen him play good at least. We can at least do something with this. But you're right. This is it. This is the one coming up this week, because you saw him put it on. And listen, if he was horrible last week, you'd be going down a different road right now. But you can at least take a breath and relax and figure out what you want to do at this point. So go ahead, Darren.
And even looking at the schedule, even if we had Aaron Rodgers, there's a chance we would be a best 2-2 right now also. So the fact that we're 1-3, the first six were always going to be the challenge. And the challenge was going to be, are we going to be 2-4? Are we going to be 3-3? If we are at least 2-4, that still gives you a chance, because this, after the bye week, the schedule becomes, at least out of the division, a lot easier. We still have to play Miami twice. We still have Buffalo, but a lot of the rest of the schedule.
And New England too. So another place we don't play well.
So I agree with you, Kev. If you're 2-4, the only issue is if you're 2-4, and what does Zach look like?
Exactly.
Because that's really what it's going to come down to over the next two games, because you could be 2-4 and still turn around. But if you're 2-4 and then you're going to play the Giants, the Chargers, and the Raiders, and you have no confidence in Zach going into any of those games, then you're going down a bad path. So,
yeah.
Darren?
He needs to put up now the next 2 weeks here, building on this Kansas City game. Play good. We're not asking for MVP, all-star, all-pro caliber quarterbacking. We're asking him to play good quarterback. Limit the mistakes. I don't mind him throwing interception when it's, if he's trying to drive the ball down the field, interceptions happen. I don't mind aggressive interceptions. It's a stupid mistake interceptions that kill you.
It's him missing open receivers. It's him flinging the ball down the sidelines without reckless abandon.
Yep.
So,
if you throw up a 50-50 ball to Garrett Wilson and he gets picked, I don't mind that, because you're trying to hit Garrett Wilson, a guy who can make a play. He needs to be throwing a 50-50 ball a couple times a game.
Yeah, my only point is we struggle in Denver generally. So this is no walkover. And Denver's got a little momentum on their side after a nice comeback win themselves. This is a little bit of a bloodbath between Hackett and Peyton because of comments that were made earlier. But the Jets have to come out and they have to play spirited ball. They are the more talented team of the two. And that's the one thing that we have to hang our hat on here. We are better than they are if we play our way. A couple of quick points on the defense. Just overall in general. There were some things that just didn't go right in this game. First and foremost, need to put out an APB on Carl Lawson and Michael Clemens, because to be perfectly honest, I don't see enough of these guys at all on the defensive line. The two touchdowns we gave up, second week in a row, Whitehead misses the tight end. Just lets a tight end go, a lumbering backup tight end go. At some point, I know he had three picks in week one. At some point, Whitehead has to know his assignment. So we gave up a 30-plus yard touchdown to Gray. And the other one was a 3rd-and-1. They bunched the line, and Pacheco got through it. If you're playing a normal defense, he doesn't score on that play. So we got beat on two relatively large plays in kind of I don't know, strange circumstances. Just got beat to the backup tight end. The other point, Michael Carter drops a third down pass on, when they would have had a first down, then Zuerlein missed the long field goal. Michael Carter's got to catch that. That pass was fine. No reason for that. McGovern goes ineligible man downfield. What the hell are you doing? It was a big play to Uzomah. I mean, we had a 15-yard gain on that play, and then we were forced to punt because McGovern goes downfield. Fumble on second and nine from the 49 hurt because the Jets were moving the ball. That was the Zach fumble. And the final drive, first and foremost, the Jets got a couple calls in the first half, okay? The horse collar wasn't a horse collar.
Right.
Clear, okay?
Yeah.
That led to the touchdown. So let's not act like it didn't help. We were first and 15 on that play. It would have been second and 13. Who knows? But we got a touchdown on that. We got the horse collar. And the safety didn't look like a safety to me because I've never seen it where you grab the face mask and you have to turn it before they call it. Usually, as soon as you grab that face mask, it was in the field of play. That ball should have been spotted at the half-yard line, I think. So I think we got the benefit on two. But on that last drive, that third and 23 scramble, I mean, Jermaine is getting held. I mean, so bad that it's blatant. He picks up his arm. He's got to learn how to flail. He's got to learn how to fall. Yeah. He's got to – I'm being honest.
Yeah, you're right.
Otherwise, you don't get the call. He's got to learn – oh, you gotta like fall backwards and make it look like let him know that he's got you because that really hurt. And then the horrible defensive holding call on Sauce. It wasn't even that they called it as much as he threw the flag after the ball was picked. It was basically saying, a rookie ref. Oh, let me just throw it out there. A rookie official. I said he's not the referee, but it's like, how blatant. I've never seen a call that late.
Yeah.
Where they throw the flag that late after the pick. They waited for Carter to come down with it before he tossed it. And it wasn't even a hold. They've been playing physical all night. Kev?
If I was going to say, it was definitely not a hold. If you want to get him for anything, maybe illegal contact. If it was being called tight the whole game, it's illegal contact. But it was not being called tight the whole game. And all of a sudden, they're going to throw the flag there. But like you said, Darren, it's the timing of the flag. If you saw that hold, why are you waiting 5 seconds before throwing the flag?
I agree with you. It was awful.
If that flag came out right away, Sauce made contact. He held, even though there was no hold. Throw the flag. Don't wait till it was intercepted and returning when all of a sudden here comes the flag out. It's like, God, well, they got the message that the Chiefs and Kelce and Taylor Swift weren't supposed to lose.
I mean, it was a little ridiculous. It really was. Cat G, sorry?
Listen, it's a bad call to start with. But the delay of him throwing the flag just enhanced the fact that, hey, I'm making this call, and I know half these people aren't even going to think it's a hold, but I'm throwing it. And, I mean, it's a bad call. The problem that I have with this is that we see this just too often in the NFL with these bad calls. And,
what's happening is the athletes are bigger, stronger, and faster than ever, and the officials aren't able to necessarily keep up with the speed of the game.
Yeah.
The NFL has to do one thing. It's a simple thing. Make these guys full-time. Get full-time officials. Make them accountable. Make them have to work all week. Make them – it's not just a Sunday job as a part-timer because I'm a lawyer during the week, but it's something I'm doing as a full-time employee. How much would it really cost a league that makes this many billions of dollars every year? It wouldn't cost them anything. It's time to freaking get full-time officials.
And what do they do during the week?
They work other jobs. They would sit there and study film, Kev. They would study film and work on it. That's all they would do.
Okay.
The idea would be
if you think that would be help. Okay. Didn't know what you meant by full-time. You know, what would they do during the week?
Make them study. I mean, we have full-time baseball umpires and stuff like that.
They're playing every day, too.
But that's they're playing 5, 6, 7 games a week.
Yeah.
Got full-time NBA officials. They're not playing every day, maybe twice a week, three times. Same thing with NHL. It's not like they're playing every single night. But with the NFL, have them do scrimmages. Have them work college games. Have them work other things. Have them do whatever. Just get them used to playing with the rules. Make sure they understand what they're doing because they're missing too much stuff. They're just missing too much stuff. It can only help. It can't make them worse. It can't make it any weaker. No more Taylor Swift, thank God. Right, we don't have to hear about this anymore. The Giants don't play them. We won't see another Chief game that affects us in this area. And there was way too much red in the stadium. It looked like it was at least a third filled with the Chiefs fans this week.
It's all the new fans of the Chiefs all of a sudden.
It's the well, yeah, they're the new Patriots now.
Yeah.
So
it felt like, you know, it's funny watching that broadcast. I felt like NBC was disappointed because the Jets made it a game. They couldn't focus on Swift too much.
Collinsworth was gushing over Zach a little bit more than I expected.
Yeah.
Rodney Harrison was actually downright rude to him.
Oh.
Called him garbage after the game, which was like.
I mean, Chris Jones
was.
Chris Jones has. Well. I gained so much respect for Jones with him not taking the bait and keeping it classy there.
And I got to say something, and we'll get to it when we talk about the Giants, too. Micah Parsons came out and defended Zach and Daniel Jones this week. Maybe because he beat them as a combined 78 to 10. I don't know. But Micah came out a little bit classy with that stuff. This was the highest rated football game since the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
27 million viewers. And we'll get to the Giants in a second, but there are only two NFL teams that have not had an offensive snap with the lead this year, the Jets and the Giants.
Yes, I saw that. I have it on my notes.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable how bad these two teams have been. Now we look forward to Denver, and we're an underdog in that game. So the pundits think that Denver should win this game. So let's see what happens.
All right. We will move to the other New York team. Seattle beats the Giants 24-3 on Monday night. Seattle had 10 sacks. The Giants were never in this game. Daniel Jones was running for his life.
I don't agree there.
Game. Okay. He was running for his life half the game. One of the big plays is a Seattle return 97-yard interception for a touchdown.
The game was 7-3 at that point. If the Giants busted in, the Giants will take the lead.
It was 14-3.
Seattle
missed
two field goals, a bad play. They gave away – they should have had another 10 points at least in this game.
Gino, they scored 24 points, 14 of them. One started at the 8-yard line. The other one was an interception return. The Giants was not – they didn't miss a lot of tackles, but they weren't awful.
And the one touchdown was just –
The Giants did not look like they were in this game at any point in time. I'm sorry.
Well, no, the offense was awful.
The score may have been closer than that. They did not look like they were in this game at all at any point after the first quarter at all. The whole game. Are you going to tell me the score was only this or that? Fine, but – They didn't look like they were in this game at all.
I'm guessing they didn't have a great offensive showing either. The Giants are the reason why Seattle was in it. The interception return was 7 points. Jones's fumble was 7 points. And the broken play screen pass that went for 65 yards to Fant was the other 7 points.
I mean, Seattle had under 300 yards of offense.
Yeah, I mean, and the Giants tackled like crap.
Yeah.
Listen, by the way, on this game, If Dable doesn't remind you of Mangini yet, I don't know when he's going to start doing it. Part of that, he was a god the first season, and now all of a sudden he's getting short with the reporters. Joe Shane, who you heard was this genius guy, did nothing to build up this offensive line. Seattle played without four offensive linemen. Giants were missing their left tackle. Okay, and the Giants are blaming it on Andrew Thomas not being there. Seattle had neither of their starting tackles. Neither of them. And they weren't crying, bitching, and moaning about not having. I know they didn't have Barkley. I get that. And Barkley is the best player on the field for the Giants. But Daniel Jones, I mean, besides some scrambles, I mean, he's regressed. 2 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, I mean, so far this year. And I know he's trying to press, but my God, this team has been, outside of 2 quarters against Arizona, this team has been completely uncompetitive. Kev, any thoughts?
Yeah, you know, the 3 turnovers, you can't have that. From your $40 million quarterback. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it's amazing. You know, Philly can run that push play to perfection. Giants run it once, and they lose two offensive linemen. They get hurt on the same play. Schmidt went out, and one of the other linemen went out, too.
Yeah, well, Schmidt went out the center, and then, one of the guards. I just can't remember which one.
Yeah. But 10 sacks allowed, I mean, that was just a pathetic performance by the offensive line.
Last time a quarterback was sacked 10 times and threw a pick six, Ken O'Brien, 1985, at the Raiders.
I'm not surprised at that name.
85, we were a little bit better. I was stunned it was the year. I was stunned on the year because we weren't awful in 85. But 10 sacks and threw a pick six. Last time that happened was 1985.
So Jets 1-3. We talked about it. They got Denver coming up, then they got Philly. Giants now at 1-3. They got my at Miami, at Buffalo. They're looking at potentially 1-5, and then home for Washington and the Jets. Season could take a drastic turn for the worse in the next couple of weeks with this team. They go 1-5. They're basically done at that point.
Point of parliamentary procedure. No, I'm just kidding. But the fact is this. The NFC is weaker. Okay, 7 wins, probably not, but 8-9 can still get you in. You still got Philly twice, but that last game against Philly may not mean anything to Philly. We don't know yet. Washington, you know, doesn't look like it's a giant sweep, but maybe they get a split out of it. Maybe they can beat up a couple other teams in the schedule. So it's not like the Jets. The Jets have to be above 500 to make the playoffs. The Giants do not, because the NFC is that weak. We saw this week Tampa Bay pretty much annihilated New Orleans, and we'll get to those games later. And so the Saints don't scare you. The Packers don't scare you. The Vikings don't scare you. There's a lot of teams. The Falcons don't scare you. Teams with 2 wins. The Cardinals don't scare you. I mean, the Rams don't scare you. These are all teams that you don't think are that great. So it's going to be a battle for that 7 spot. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, so they are now 1-3, 4 games in.
They're going to be 1-5, no doubt about it.
No, wait, just wait. So they're 1-3. If we go by our preseason scheduled picks, we now have them going 6-7 over the next 13, which means they will be 7-10. So, you know, if we just go by that, you know, 7-10, they're nowhere close to that 9 number. They're 2 games away from that.
I don't think they need 9. I think they need 8, Jake. Okay. I really think they need 8. I think they're going to be fighting with Washington. Right. And listen, to me, Philly, Dallas, San Francisco, Detroit, and let's say Tampa wins that division 5. And I think everybody else is fighting for the other 2. And I think that they're not that far out of it. I'm not saying that they're going to get there, but they're going to have to win a game we're not expecting them to win.
Again,
Seattle's not a great team, and they look like garbage. I mean, they literally can't – they haven't scored a touchdown in the first half all year. I mean, Daniel Jones just got all this money. I mean, I know that they can get out of this contract after next year. I mean, it's not like a long-term deal. They can get out of it. But, my goodness, he does not look like the answer right now.
So I made the comment last week when I was talking about the Jets that they were basically a bad Josh Allen game away from being 0-4. The same thing for the Giants. You know, they're one half against they're a second half against the Cardinals away from being 0-4 also.
No doubt.
What I mean? Yep. It's not like they've looked good in any of these games except for the second half against Arizona, who we know is not that good to begin with. So,
no, all right. They had to rush Barkley back, which is – and they were willing not to sign him. That's how lost this team was before the season started. Anyway.
All right. Going around the NFL, so we have 2 teams at 4-0. San Francisco beat Arizona 35-16. McCaffrey had 177 yards from scrimmage, 4 touchdowns in the game.
MVP.
MVP at the moment. The other 4-0 team is Philadelphia. They beat Washington 34-31. Elliott hit a 54-yard field goal in overtime for the win. Hurts had 2 touchdowns. Big play is going to be, and both of my co-hosts are waving at me because they know it's coming. Listen, I'll let you guys get to the play, but my big thing is that the Washington offensive line has got to be better than this. Howell can't be back. They're getting sacked 5 times every game. They're not going to win like this as a Washington fan. It's just not going to happen. Do I now have to change the name from Riverboat Ron after he does not go for the field goal to try as he goes for the extra point and not the 2-point conversion? But he also had a chance where, you know, he could have went for it. He said his players were tired. That was the excuse.
Go ahead. Worst excuse ever, by the way.
His players are tired. What do you think the Philadelphia Eagles defense is?
Not even that. If your players are tired, you don't extend the damn game. First and foremost, when you're the weaker team on the road, you play for the win. The longer a game goes, the better team has a better chance of winning. It's that simple. And with Hurts and that push, tush, push, freaking 2 yards every time they need it, and they got it in overtime, they're going to move the ball every time. You're not as talented as they are. You try to steal the win, and they had it there to steal, and they didn't freaking take it. I was stunned. And I thought that was the worst call of the weekend. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. It was the worst call of the weekend.
No, we'll get to that other. There's a couple of other calls.
Staley sucks. Staley. Brandon Staley does not count. Brandon Staley's an idiot. He should have been fired 2 years ago.
Oh, no.
Outside Staley, this is the worst call of the weekend.
I was referring to Mr. Eberflus. We'll get to him also.
Well, his was awful, too. Don't kick the field. Right, we'll get to that, too, but yes.
Anything else on Washington, Philly, before we move on?
A.J. Brown's ridiculous. Okay.
Green Bay moves. I'm sorry. Detroit moves to 3-1 with a 34-20 win over Green Bay. Highlight in that game was Montgomery with 121 yards and 3 TDs. Jordan Love got sacked 5 times. Jacksonville moves to 2-2 with the 23-7 victory over Atlanta. Big play in the game was Darius Williams, 61 yard touchdown interception. Listen, Jacksonville, this game was basically over at the half when Jacksonville was up 17-0. Atlanta was not mounting any offensive at all. The Desmond Ridder experiment may be over very, very shortly, the way he's been playing.
You've got to keep him out there for at least a half a season, at the least.
Listen, he's not dynamic, but he's enough. He's all they need. They're going to run the ball.
And if he's that bad, you want them to lose because this quarterback draft, this class looks real good. It goes real deep. So you want to make sure you're up there.
My only thing with that, though, Kev, is, you know, you're 2-2, and Atlanta could be a playoff team if Ridder was playing better. Listen, we just talked about how weak
the NFC is. Because of the NFC, yeah.
You know,
hey, guys, NFL quarterback play this year has not been good.
No, it okay? hasn't.
It simply has not been good. I mean, you know, Green Bay's 2-2. Love has not been great.
No.
Even really good. No. Derek Carr has not been good. Mayfield looks better than a lot of people because they've looked horrible. Stroud is someone that stands out to you. There's been a lot of substandard quarterback play. Even Howell had a great game, a bad game. I mean, you know, he's all over the place. Daniel Jones, who's getting paid like he's a god, he's been awful. I mean, a lot of quarterback play has been downright awful this year. Jake?
Yeah.
And Burrow, talk about stars too, by the way.
Yeah, that was the London game. Kev?
Mr. Disney, what did you think of the Disney Plus coverage? Did you just catch any of it?
I did. I actually had 2 TVs going at the same time. So I had the regular coverage and the Disney Plus coverage side by side. I thought it was very cute. I thought if you have kids that are maybe 10 or under, this is a good way to let them see a little football and at the same time get their dose of what it was.
Yeah,
I will tell you as a Disney fan, I enjoyed the little things they did, but as far as trying to watch a game, this was not play-by-play. There were definitely plays in between that they weren't covering because I had them side-by-side, so I was watching. But it was cute. It was a novel idea. I kind of got a kick out of some of the things they were doing, so it wasn't bad. What did you think?
I think, first of all, from a technical perspective, it's incredible what they've done.
Oh, amazing. I mean
that part was incredible. You're right. If you have young kids, it's a perfect thing. Especially, you know, once a year on a Sunday morning to throw a Disney Plus game on like this, once a year, try to get some little kid involved that maybe would not be exposed to football. Perfect. Have at it.
Yeah.
The football fan. I mean, unless you're a diehard, unless you got money in the game, I'm not getting up to purposely watch Jacksonville and Atlanta from London at 9:30 in the morning on a Sunday.
I'm sorry.
I was on an autism walk. I didn't see one play.
I saw 5 minutes. I did give it five minutes just to get a sense of it.
I did not see one play. I was at an autism walk.
So I
didn't see it.
Moving on, Buffalo beat Miami 48-20. Both teams are now 3-1. Buffalo never trailed in the game. Josh Allen, 4 touchdowns plus a rushing touchdown. Diggs had 3 scores. Miami in this particular game looked a little overmatched going against this Buffalo team. Darren?
Buffalo did something really interesting that I saw anyway. They took away the middle of the field, and they forced Tua to only be able to throw outside. And listen, we make fun of his lollipops. He's a very accurate passer, but they put pressure on him. He had pressure up the middle, and they forced him to throw the ball out. They didn't allow Hill to run these little in patterns or these little skinny posts. They made him actually have to throw the ball wide and outside, and I thought they did a great job on that and gave you a little bit of a blueprint of how to play this team. Tua under 300 yards. Hill had 3 catches. And the simple fact of the matter, like I said last week, you score 70 points in a week, you shot your load. That's it. It's over. You're done. You can't. You're not going to do it. Either you're going to score 50 the next week, or you're going to score what they did. And you score 20, and you're going to get blown out by a team that's a little bit more physical than you are.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Moving on. Denver beat Chicago 31-28. This was the battle of 0-3 teams. Denver gets the victory. Chicago moves to 0-4. Justin Fields was good in this game. 335, 4 touchdowns and an interception. Chicago was up 21-7. Denver rallied back from
28-7, G. 28-7.
Russell Wilson threw for 3 touchdowns. Javonte Williams left with a hip injury. Lutz kicked a 51-yard field goal for the win. The big call of this is when Chicago, in the fourth quarter, instead of going for a field goal on 4th-and-1 from the 18, decides to run the ball. They don't get it. Turn the ball over, and that's where we go. Darren.
I mean, what's wrong with taking the go-ahead field goal? I mean, it happened. I can't believe it. We're not talking about a 50-yarder. We're talking about a 35-yard kick. You want to say he's going to spot it a half yard back? Call it a 36-yard field goal. It's 2 minutes and change to go in the game. We're not talking about, 9-minute mark. You take the lead. You take the points. I mean, they let Denver back in it. I mean, Fields got stripped for a touchdown. Wilson kind of threw it around a little bit. Eberflus is – I could have been fired after that game, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But I feel the same way about Brandon Staley every week.
You have to send the kicker out there to take the lead at that point. You're winless.
Boom.
Take the lead.
Eberflus and Staley, it's the race to see who gets fired first at this point.
Oh, my God. It's horrendous. Staley wins a couple games. That's why.
And something you started to say is, Darren, you're right, which is I don't understand what is wrong with the field goal. And I actually said this to you guys, which is
yeah,
I don't understand why everybody doesn't like the field goal all of a sudden. It's 3 points. Put the damn points on the board. There's something to be said about putting points on the board. I know everybody's going to tell me mathematics. Put the points on the board.
The only team right now that you would go for on 4th-and-1 in that situation, there's only one team that should go for it.
Philly.
Yeah. Because you know it's a guaranteed 3 yards.
Until they ban this illegal play, or maybe it's not illegal. Maybe they just have a low center that gets down. It's not illegal. I mean, because it's obviously legal. It's just annoying because you can't stop it.
Yep.
Okay. Baltimore beat Cleveland 28-3. No Deshaun Williams with an injury. Darren Thomas Robinson was a quarterback. Just the fact that he was in there, the whole game flipped. Lamar had 4 touchdowns, 2 running, 2 passing. Cleveland had nothing going with this quarterback. There was nothing going on. Tennessee beat Cincinnati 27-3. Tennessee moves to 2-2. Cincinnati moves to 1-3. I got news to you. Cincinnati was not in this for most of this game. Burrow was definitely hurt. You can see it.
Yeah.
Either he needs to be out and rehab whatever's going on, but he just was not in this. Derrick Henry ran and threw for a touchdown in the game. Tennessee had 400 yards compared to Cincinnati's 211. It was never a game.
Yeah. Derrick Henry looked like Derrick Henry.
Yeah, absolutely.
And T. Higgins comes out of that game with a broken rib. So, yep. His status for this week at least is questionable.
Yep.
So without if you got Higgins there, not hurt, either not playing or hurting while he's playing, and you've got Burrow struggling, this Bengal team just doesn't.
And honestly, Kev, the defense that we saw last year, it's just not the same right now. Also with Cincinnati, you could see it. The Rams take care of the Colts 29-23. Stafford had a touchdown pass to Puka Nacua in overtime. The Rams were up 20-0 at the half in this game, by the way. It's one of those games. Tampa Bay beats New Orleans 26-9. Baker, 3 touchdowns. Tampa Bay held the Saints to just 3 field goals. Tampa Bay moves to 3-1.
Derek Carr, 23 completions, 127 yards.
Yeah.
Talk about driving the ball down the field there.
Checking down.
And then we get to the other 0-4 team, Carolina. Minnesota wins 21-13 in the battle of the other 0-3 teams. Jefferson had 2 touchdowns. Big play in the game was the Wanham 51-yard fumble return for the touchdown. With 4:09 left, it was a strip sack on Bryce Young. Pittsburgh, who I've told you is not good, loses to Houston 30-6. This was never a game. Stroud had 306 and twos. The yardage. Houston had 451 to Pittsburgh's 225. Pickett gets injured in this game. Nico Collins, by the way, looks like he's becoming a receiver in this league now. 7 for 168 with 2 touchdowns. Darren?
First quarterback in history to have his first 4 starts without a pick, Stroud. The kid has looked good. He's thrown for 300 yards 3 games in a row. He's off to a really good start. Houston's defense has been better than expected, and Pittsburgh really didn't show up in this game. Pickett was lost. He had a hard time getting the ball out of his hand before he got hurt. It wasn't just a win. They beat him down. They beat him down big.
Yep. Okay. Dallas beats New England 38-3. Talk about a team that was never in it. New England was never in this game. Cowboys had 2 defensive touchdowns. Mac, 3 turnovers. This is the worst loss for Belichick. And the last game on the menu was the Chargers beating the Raiders 24-17. Khalil Mack had 6 sacks in the game. Jimmy was out in this game. Herbert had 3 touchdowns. He played basically the last quarter with a broken finger. Who would like to go first? Kevin?
Darren, you want to talk about the other game?
Go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to mention the Rams were actually up 23-0 in that game, and they missed 2 field goals. And they still the Colts came storming back. Stafford's obviously hurt.
Yeah, and Colts needed 2 for 2 and 2-point conversions to help
absolutely
out with that.
And, Stafford injured, but they were up 23-0 and missed 2 field goals. Could have been 29-0. Instead, the Colts found a way to score and tie that game up, send it to overtime. But the team that got the ball first won it. I won a nice bet on that game because I was getting a point and a half, and I was happy. Kev, I'll let you start off here with the Chargers.
Oh, you would think Mr. Staley would have learned his lesson from last week. I'm going to call this Brandon Staley is an Idiot, the sequel. Same as last week. You're at 4th-and-1 in your own end of the field.
This 34-yard line. 34-yard line.
They're on 34 with 3:34 left. Just like last week, he goes for it. The Chargers don't get it.
What is wrong with the field goal, Kev?
No. It's a punt. It's a punt.
The punt.
He's again lucky. Second straight week, he gets bailed out. This time it was an Aiden O'Connell interception. Last week it was Kirk Cousins throwing the pick. This week it's O'Connell throwing the pick to bail him out for a second straight week. What the hell does this guy need to do to learn how to coach?
And then not only that, Asante Samuel picks the ball off. And there's still over 2 minutes to go. 2 timeouts, he slides down.
Yeah.
So they had to give they almost had to give the ball back. So then they use their 2 timeouts. We get to the 2-minute warning. Their timeouts are done. 3rd down. And they throw a bomb. And it completed. Yeah. It worked. But it was almost 4th down. And you're putting the ball back with 1:56. I mean, I just don't understand what the plan is. And it works, so he gets away with it. But what are you doing? First of all, Samuel, you have 90 yards of nothing in front of you. You take the touchdown there. There's 2 minutes and change. It's not like the Mahomes play, which is bright, because the only way you could lose – oh, you can sit there and want your 9.5 or whatever the fuck.
I know.
But the fact of the matter is, he did the only play that you have no chance to lose on. He slid at the one, McKinnon did in the Super Bowl. It's the smart play. I mean, you can get mad all you want as a gambler, but it's the smart play. He slid with 2 minutes and 30 seconds to go. What are you doing? Your father played in the league for years. He wouldn't have been that dumb. What are you doing? There's so many stupid things. It's like the Chargers by osmosis just trade stupidity with each other over and over again. This team doesn't want to win. This coach has to go. This coach has to go. G?
All right. And just as an upcoming issue, this coming Sunday, we do have another London game. The Bills play the Jags. And the big game of next weekend, this week, coming weekend, is going to be the Sunday night game between San Francisco, Dallas. So,
good one. And we have four byes this week: Seahawks, Browns, Bucks, and Chargers. What was it? The Falcons played. First time I think I remember a team playing in London and then playing the week after. Usually you get a bye, right? Maybe it happened last year too. I don't remember. But Atlanta played last week and then they play this week. So I know it's not that far. It's probably like the same as going to California almost, maybe a little longer, but surprised. Anyway. Yep.
All right. And that will wrap NFL week four. Darren, let's talk a little college football.
Yeah, we'll do it quick. Okay, listen, this week we had a couple of good games, but there was also a few blowouts. Ranked blowouts: Oregon, Alabama, Missouri, Michigan, Penn State, Oklahoma, and Kentucky all rolled. Kentucky actually beat the ranked team. They rolled over Florida, who was ranked 19th at the time. Conference foes on the road. Anything could happen. Kev?
Yeah, Ray Davis, the running back from Kentucky, 26 carries, 280 yards, and 3 touchdowns.
Had a monster game. Texas beat up number 24, Kansas. Huge second half. Kansas played without their quarterback. But nonetheless, still a big roll game. USC was rolling. Colorado stormed back. Made it a game. USC didn't score in the fourth quarter. They led 34-7, held on 48-41. Oregon State.
Caleb Williams, 403, 6 touchdowns. Is this guy going to win back-to-back Heismans for the first time?
He's got a shot. He also made an announcement today saying that he can make more money staying in college with the way it all works now than going pro, so he can pick his team if he wants to.
Wow.
That's always nice to hear. Oregon State, in the game that we picked as the game of the week, like me and Kev actually kind of predicted. Sorry, Jake. They would just run the ball, control the clock, 21-7.
No Cam Rising and under 200 yards of offense for Utah.
Well, they haven't had Cam Riser all year, and they need him because they didn't have a lot of offense against UCLA either, but they were able to win with a defensive touchdown. Fresno State struggled a little bit more than one Kevin thought in a 27-9 game against Nevada.
It was 27-0 in the fourth quarter. They gave up a safety, and then they gave up a touchdown with 13 seconds left to blow the cover.
27-9. Washington held off Arizona. This was a game that I didn't expect to be close at all. 31-24 for Washington. They're looking ahead a little bit. In 2 weeks, they have the monster game against Oregon at home. Tennessee handled South Carolina in a revenge game, 41-20.
Yep.
Kind of knew the revenge was coming. One of the games – we had three really good games, all right? Georgia escaped Jordan-Hare with a 27-20 win over Auburn. Auburn led 10-0 early. Beck to Bowers with 2:52 left put Georgia up for good. Auburn got up to about midfield, got stopped on the fourth down. Georgia doesn't look invincible, and Auburn looks like they're growing pretty quick under Hugh Freeze. Kev, any thoughts?
No, yeah, that's everything I had.
All right. Perhaps I'm going to do the game of the day last. So Notre Dame 21, Duke 14. This game was very interesting. Notre Dame led 13-0 in the third, and then Duke storms back with 14 unanswered points. Kev sitting there praying for the two-point conversion to go awry at the end when Estime rushes for 30 yards, touchdown with 31 seconds left.
Get down, take the field goal.
But they went for the two and got it. And then Leonard, unfortunately, had a high ankle sprain on the last play of the game. Hartman showed some pretty good sportsmanship, waiting for him to get up to congratulate him on a good game. Leonard did a nice job. He didn't have great stats, but he got the team back in it. Real physical game. Actually, a very good game. 21-14 final for the Irish. And finally, Ole Miss comes back and beats LSU in an absolute epic.
Yeah.
Ole Miss led 21-7 early. LSU fights back to take a 49-40 lead with 8:34 to play. Ole Miss gets the go-ahead score with 39 seconds left. Unbelievable game. 55-49 final. Daniels threw for 414 and four touchdowns. He also had 99 yards rushing and a touchdown. Dart at Ole Miss had 389 and four touchdowns and 50 yards rushing. It was an offensive display. These are two rival schools. Ole Miss and LSU are big rivals. And it was just a fun game to watch. If you like offense, it was a very fun game to watch. I couldn't keep my eyes off of it a little bit.
Yeah, the game-winning drive, you know, took eight plays, 88 yards, in just under 2 minutes. They scored the touchdown with 39 seconds left. LSU, though, got the ball all the way down to the 16. Two false-start penalties back-to-back, and then
that was that.
In the end zone.
Just two other quick notes, just because of the comebacks. Baylor, 35-7 down in the third, 35-10 in the fourth, storms back and beats my UCF team. God damn it. I felt really good about that. I had a nice little bet on that. And just because we have to talk about them every week, Appalachian State beats UL Monroe 41-40 on a 54-yard field goal at the gun. This team does never not play a fun game. I mean, they played the University of Louisiana Monroe on the road. He hits a 54-yarder at the gun. Unbelievable after the way they lost last week. You can't in the last two seasons, we must have mentioned Appalachian State at least six times.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable how much fun the games this team plays. I saw not one play of this, so I can't talk about what happened, but wow. Crazy. This week, four ranked teams play each other and another that should be ranked facing each other as well. LSU, number 23, plays at Missouri, 21. Number 20, Kentucky, plays at Georgia, number one team in the country. Number 10, Notre Dame, visits number 25, Louisville. I don't know what Maryland has to do to get ranked, but they play at Ohio State this week. And then the biggie, the Texas State Fair plays host to the Red River Rivalry. Oklahoma, Texas, half the stadium in crimson and cream, the other half in burnt orange and white. Number 12, Oklahoma at number 3, Texas. So Gabriel versus Ewers, Texas favored by 6.5. Kev, who wins the Red River Rivalry this year? Last year, by the way, 49-0 win for Texas. Huge blowout last year. Who do you like this week?
Oklahoma has revenge on their mind this year after being blown out so badly last year. But I think Texas is better. It's under a touchdown. I'm taking Texas, laying the 6.5.
Gee, you've been riding Texas all season. I can't imagine you're going to stop now. Just a hunch.
It's 2 weeks in a row. We're taking them for a third straight week. Texas under a touchdown, like Kev said. I like them. Take Texas minus the 6.5.
Okay. Texas leads the all-time series 63-50, but Oklahoma's won 10 of the last 14 in the rivalry. Last year, however, we did have the 49-0 shellacking. I'm taking Oklahoma to bounce back. Close game, Oklahoma 31, Texas 27.
Okay, before we get into the other two picks for the week from each of us, yep. I will tell you Darren is 11-3-1, Gino 9-5-1, Kevin 8-6-1. We are 28-14-3, guys.
We're very proud of ourselves.
Wow.
We're doing nice pretty good. 500 all year.
It will balance itself out when we get to the NFL side, but for the moment, we are way ahead on the college side. Kev?
And two bad beats. God, I hate last week football betting wise.
Kevin thinks you should be 10-4. I thought I should have hit the UCF game. The fact that they blew a 35-7 lead just kills me.
Yep. So my other two games, the one that you mentioned before, that this team should be ranked. They're playing very well this year. Maryland, how they're not in the top 25 at least.
I don't know.
I don't see it. They're getting 20 points at Ohio State. Yes, it's a road game. Yes, Ohio State's better. I think Ohio State has a little bit of a letdown after last week.
The Notre Dame game.
And I think Maryland is able to cover. I think 20 is too many in this game. I'll take Maryland plus 20.
Okay.
And my third game, I'm going local. One of the first times this year we're mentioning them, at least local to me. The Black Knights, Army, playing at home. Mikey Stadium against a terrible Boston College team. They're only laying a field goal. I'll take Army laying that field goal. They're going to win by at least 10.
Good enough. All right. G, where you going, G?
I'm starting off with North Carolina. Pass rush is going to be too much for Syracuse. North Carolina minus 8.5. I'm taking UNC. And in my second game, I like Alabama minus the 2.5 for Texas A&M. They put up 40 last week against Mississippi State. They trying to get into the top 10. I think they do it. I think 2.5 is a very low number for them to cover. I like Alabama minus the 2.5. Darren, who do you like?
Much like you, Gino, I like picking a team that's been good to me. Oregon State laying 9.5 at Cal. They're just physical. I like the way they play. I'm not an Oregon State fan by any stretch. I never root for them in the Civil War. I usually root for Oregon. But I like Oregon State laying 9.5 at Cal. The other one that's in, I had three of them I was looking at. I'm going to go with this one. I'm going to take Iowa minus 2.5 against Purdue. No, the quarterback got hurt. I just think Iowa's defense will shut them down. This is an under game if there ever was one of them to me. This game has 14-3 written all over it. I'll take Iowa to find a way, maybe a defensive touchdown to win it. So I'm going to take Oregon State minus 9.5 and Iowa minus 2.5.
All right.
And that's it for college football, my friend.
All right. We will move to a very small version of Ryder Cup. Europe winds up beating the U.S., and that's all I have about that. Kev?
It was over after foursomes on Friday morning. A clean sweep by Europe, gave them the 4-0 lead. The afternoon four balls, it was 2.5, 1.5, 1.5 points by the U.S. were three halves. And McIlroy and Fitzpatrick beat Shoffley and Morikawa, gave them the 6.5, 1.5 lead. And Saturday, almost as big a blowout as you can have. Hovland and Aberg, 9-7 over.
Never, Kepler. I've never seen it that bad.
Yeah. The only possible worst is 10-8 or 9-8. 11 holes and this match was over.
Yeah.
But you know, after Friday morning, U.S. had no chance. They were beaten after the first round. The only guy who really showed up was Homa. He played all five. He went 3-1-1. Outside of that, it was just not a good performance by anybody on the U.S. team.
Yeah, for me, Europe dominated. There was a little dissension rumors on the American team about Cantlay. Really ended up that the dissension was he didn't want to get filmed for the video. It wasn't that he wanted to get paid. So it was a little different than they were reporting. And he also said he didn't wear the hat because it didn't fit.
Yeah.
So it was a little bit of a different type thing. U.S. almost made it interesting on Sunday for a little bit. Started getting some red on the board where it looked like there was a shot of a miracle where it would come down to the final two matches. Then Spieth kind of like lost it. He wasn't playing well all day, and Lowry kind of caught him, and that was that. Fowler had the weirdest concession I've ever seen in a Ryder Cup. I mean, I know it was a short putt that Fleetwood was going to hit anyway, but you got to make him take. You just don't give him the cup.
Make him put it out for the cup. I mean, come on.
Koepka critiqued Rahm, which was kind of interesting. You know, I got to say this, and I know you're a fan, and I like him too somewhat, but Rory, shut the hell up. I mean, my God, to sit there and start these fights in the parking lot because you felt disrespected because they were waving the hats.
Yeah.
I mean, go win a major. Why don't you focus on that rather than be the etiquette police of freaking golf? Enough about this stuff already. Every time something goes wrong, he's got to be all fired up. Shut the hell up. I'm tired of hearing about you. Win a major. Go out and freaking figure out how to win a major. And you know what? It just drives me a little crazy sometimes. It's like, come on.
I mean, at that point, it was 9.5, 2.5 going into that Saturday afternoon four ball. The U.S. finally got a couple of wins. They won the session 3-1. Yeah. I think they were blowing off a little steam.
Only match that Rory lost, and he acted like a freaking petulant child. Yep. Get the hell out of here with that. And the fact of the matter, Cantlay hit a big putt. And they wave the freaking hats and whatever. And attacks Bones. It's not even Cantley's caddy. He attacks Bones. And then he apologized to him. But stop being a hothead. You lost one. You went 4-1. You were dominant. You were the best player Europe had. Even though I thought Hovland looked amazing. But every time I saw him play, I didn't watch much of the matches early on. They were 1:30 in the morning. I'm not up. I can't do it. So being in Italy was not that easy. Zach goes up to Spieth, has him change clubs, he hits it in the water. So Zach, stop giving advice.
Yeah.
Outside of that, you know, Ryder Cup was not as fun as it usually is. I was hoping it would be competitive going into Sunday, and we never really got it. G?
So I'd like a little opinion from you guys. I had talked to my uncle, who is a pretty avid golfer and a big golf fan in general. And he was not interested in the Ryder Cup at all. And he gave me the opinion that, you know what, it used to really mean something when the U.S. had a tour and Europe had a tour and they didn't see each other that often. But now everybody plays with everybody every week. Okay, Liv interfered with that a little bit, but for the most part. So he was really not into it at all. And I told him, I said, you know, I kind of thought I was a little into this. I think the U.S. being down so much on Friday kind of detracted from my interest a little bit. But, you know, I was into it. What about you guys?
I was waking up Friday morning, and they already lost 4-0 in the middle of what was the afternoon four balls there. It was still early for us. I turned on, and the U.S. was down on their way to being down so big that killed the interest, not the fact that we see these guys. I think it helped the interest because we know the European players for the most part. There are a couple of guys, you know, Aberg, maybe you don't know. Højgaard, maybe you don't know. Other than that, you know almost every other name on that list.
Yeah, I agree with you. I kind of thought the same thing. Darren?
This is the only All-Star game, in my opinion, where everybody's trying to play and win.
Yeah.
So I enjoy it. They have sides perfectly well. The United States versus Europe. It's kind of like an even matchup. There's superstars on all sides. Now they're talking about it, Bethpage. Tiger's going to be captain of one, and Sergio's asking to be captain of the other. It would be really fascinating. Now the guys that we watch play, like Zach Johnson, are coaching these teams, and Furyk's the assistant and stuff like that. It's interesting to see guys that we've watched play. I kind of enjoy it because to me it's like an all-star game of pride, and I take a little bit of pride. I really do like it. I was into it on Sunday. I was into trying to watch Scheffler come out and play that first match and try to win it. It was a great matchup. I mean, I'm trying to remember I'm blanking on who he played. It was a Rahm, Scheffler and Rahm. It was like, wow, this is what I want to see. These two guys, and they halved it, you know. Yeah. But you want to see. I love match play. I love that idea of one versus one. I really kind of enjoy it. So I do get a kick out of it. Actually,
okay, yeah, I
get your uncle's point though, but I didn't watch it that much when it was that separate. I don't think that my interest in golf is as old as your uncle's, and I'm not trying to insult them on age, but I think that a lot of Europeans have played on the American tour over the last 20 years, so it's been this way for as long as I've really paid attention to Ryder and understood it, so I don't really have that big an issue with it.
I think the one point that was made was with the Europeans, you know, some of the ones who play over there, they had tournaments to play in early September. The U.S. and a lot of these American players hadn't played for 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah,
5 weeks.
So, after the FedEx Cup, they're done, basically. Yeah. So,
and as they get cut from the FedEx Cup, they're not playing anymore.
Yeah.
They had to go on the layoff, too.
I agree with you.
And now we get some of these real interesting tournaments. The Sanderson Farms Championship this weekend. Who's ready for that?
They'll be all over it.
The Shriners Children's Open next week.
It's true. You're right. Who's going to be all over that is right.
Lexi Thompson will be. She's playing next week.
Yeah, they gave her the exemption.
You know what? Why not?
I agree. I love it.
Okay, so we're moving on from the Ryder Cup, and we'll go right into baseball. Playoffs have started, and they've started in a big way because the Phillies are 3 outs away from moving on. The Arizona Diamondbacks already moved on. The Texas Rangers already moved on. The Minnesota Twins already moved on. We basically already have all our playoff matchups. Rangers are going to face the Orioles, Twins will face the Astros, Diamondbacks will face the Dodgers, and the Phillies looks like, if they can get these final 3 outs, up 7-0 going to the ninth, will be facing the Atlanta Braves. Any comments on the playoff format before we move to Yankees-Mets, guys?
Four sweeps, I didn't expect, to be honest with you. I didn't expect four sweeps. You know,
no game threes.
Toronto, Minnesota hadn't advanced in forever, 20-something years. Toronto scored one run. Yeah. Toronto can't score. They got beat up by Seattle last year. They got beat up here today by Minnesota. They scored one run in 2 games with that vaunted offense. You know, and Arizona, who limped in, beat the crap out of Milwaukee and probably new Mets manager Craig Counsell's team.
Hey, get them a chance to interview sooner than later.
It's also fun watching, Craig Counsell and Torrey Lovullo coach against each other, two guys that were like mediocre players that we've watched grow and play. Council's probably a little better than Tavulo, but you know what I mean. Very interesting.
I mean, the Rangers Rays combined 11-1 in the two games. Montgomery, 7 shutout. Uvalde, 2/3 and 1 run. I mean,
Montgomery just got himself $25 million a year for 5 years or more.
Yep.
With that start right there.
You touched on the Blue Jays, Twins, the D-backs, Brewers. I mean, game one, it was 7 1/3 scoreless innings by the Arizona bullpen to pull that game out. And then they won 5-2 today pretty easily. Gallen looked good. And then Philly is just handling Marlins pretty easily. That's also looking like an 11-1 final over the two games.
Pretty much.
I mean, the Blue Jays, Twins were close. The other two games, the other three series, just nothing.
There was nothing exciting about it. I didn't see much of it. I saw the two night series. I didn't see anything during the day. Well, a couple interesting baseball facts, though, while we go. Kev, you got to get your thoughts on Buck.
There's a lot of me that's very upset to see Bucko. You know me. I was a big Buck fan when he was managing the Yankees. I like Buck.
Actually, it was Buck's firing that made Kevin switch from Yankee to Met. For those of us that have known him long enough to know that.
30 years ago. Of course, now that Buck's gone, maybe the Mets can win the World Series like every other team that he leaves does. But, you know, this guy that won 101 games last year, down to 74. I don't know anybody who could have done a great managing job with this team. Hurt early in the year with the injuries, Scherzer, Verlander, Quintana. Diaz, of course, being lost so early. My biggest issue with Buck, early in the year especially, an over-reliance on managing for tomorrow. You only had two or three guys you could trust in the bullpen. Maybe you should have burned him out a little bit more earlier to try to keep in it and make the team and force Epler to go try to get some reinforcements. But, you know, when you're sitting there and you're seeing Brigham and Leone and Gott and one stiff reliever after another, instead of, you know, at least here's Robertson 2 days in a row, here's him 3 days in a row. What the hell? What have you got to lose? And the assistance on bringing the kids along sometimes almost too slowly. You know, Vogelbach getting all the at-bats. They didn't want to start, you know, Alvarez until they were forced to. You know, Nito's our starter when Narvaez went out. Nito's the starter. Alvarez is here to back up. Well, Alvarez finally forced his way in there. I think a little reluctance to play the youngsters a little not quickly enough. But that's nitpicking, I think. I don't think anybody could have done a good job with this team this year with the way the injuries and all worked out with the construction of the team. But, you know, with David Stearns coming in now, he wants to bring in his guy, you know, whether it's Council or somebody else. You know, you got to have to bring somebody in here who can get the most out of these young players on the Mets.
Kev, just one question for you. David Stearns comes in before even sitting with Buck, before even being in the building, says we're either going to fire you or you can quit. I'm being honest. That's how it really went down. So do you think that was appropriate or inappropriate? Because I found it highly offensive. I thought that Buck's been a too strong a baseball man to not get that exit interview. I thought it was wrong, but maybe I'm overthinking it.
But Buck's been too good for too long to deserve that treatment. No doubt about it. One thing you can say, Buck has never embarrassed an organization he's worked for. You know, you question his managerial decisions at times, fine. You know, you see him after the game in the press conferences. There's never a hint of anything going on off the field. He keeps everything in the clubhouse. You never hear anything leaking out. He defends his players probably to a fault, but you rather have that and handle the press well. And you know, like I said, probably the best thing I can say is a pure class guy as far as the manager goes. Deserved better. I deserved to have an interview with Stearns.
I thought it was a little messed up. Gino, what did the Yankees do from here? It looks like Boone's coming back. It looks like Cashman's coming back. Neither one of us are happy. What do we do from here?
They have to figure out a way on figuring out what to do with some of these players at some of these positions. If Austin Wells is your catcher, fine. If he's not, go get another catcher. I don't want to see Rovolt or whoever the hell, Higashi. I don't want to see any of these guys in here, okay? First base, I don't know if Rizzo is done or not. They're saying that all of this was a result of the concussion. I want it to be treated very seriously, but if he is not going to be the guy from 2 or 3 years ago, we don't have a first baseman. DJ LeMahieu needs to go on from this team. He needs to be moved on. He is not the answer. He is a fill-in at best at some of these positions, and that's it. He's not a starter. Okay, I think about first baseman, the first name that comes to mind is not DJ LeMahieu. I'm sorry, okay? When I think about third, I'm not bringing up DJ LeMahieu. All right? Second, short, third, Gleyber, Volpe, Peraza probably are those guys. If one of them goes in the offseason, then I hope they bring in a power bat third baseman. Okay?
It won't be Volpe that goes, by the way.
No, I don't think so. I agree with you.
There's no way it's Volpe. I'm just saying. I know we were joking a lot earlier in the year, but it won't be Volpe that goes.
I agree. Listen, I agree with you, but I'm just making the point. Judge is your right fielder, obviously. As much as a lot of people want Stanton out of here, no one's taking the contract for another 2 years, so Stanton is your DH at best. Maybe he plays a little left field, but that's it. A big shame that we lost Dominguez, because going to spring training next year with him as your center fielder could have been very interesting. Floriel looks like he's okay. Pereira looks like he's okay. In my opinion, another bat's coming in. Another outfield bat is coming in to play center or to left. I don't want the Harrison Bader. I was very happy he got traded. As far as pitching goes, I don't know what to make of Rodon. I don't know what to, we thought he was going to be the number two behind Cole. He was injured for the majority of the year, and when he came back, he looked horrible. You know, is Clark Schmidt? You got a dozen of these guys. You got Clark Schmidt, Severino. I don't know what they're doing with him. Domingo Germán, who the hell knows if he's even on the roster to start next year. You know, guys like Luke Weaver and Mike King are a dime a dozen on this team.
I think Mike King came on pretty good, by the way. Okay. I'm not going to kill Mike King yet. But I get your point.
I'm not killing anybody. But these guys are here, neither here nor there. They're fourth, fifth starters at best. Mm-hmm. You know, is Clay Holmes the closer? I hope the hell not to start next year. Is he a setup man? Maybe. But you know what I saw, he shouldn't be the closer. And you know, I agree with you at the beginning of the year. I agree with you now. They got to go out and get a closer. You know, the only good thing I could tell you is Hicks is gone, Bader is gone, Donaldson is gone from this roster. That's the only good thing to start. So we're going into the offseason with not having to deal with what the hell do we do with those three guys. Okay. There are other problems on this team, but you know, for me, honestly, I want a first baseman here. I don't know what Rizzo is going to be when he comes back. Okay. What we saw out of Rizzo was he looked like an aging first baseman. If it is because of the concussion, then I hope that he comes back and he's healthy. But you know what? I need a power first baseman. I need a power third baseman. And you know what? How about a couple of goddamn lefties swinging bats in this stadium, for God's sakes? I mean, we're not geniuses, and we know this. All right? Cashman and Boone, they can't figure out that we need some lefty bats in the stadium? Darren, tell me what you think.
This team has to come out with some urgency next year. Too many days off early in the season again for stars like Judge. He's the only guy you can count on in the lineup. Yeah, I agree with you about having a power. Listen, the Yankee strategy has always been pretty simple. Strong arms, big bullpen, power lefty bats. That's what the Yankees have done. I mean, you know, that's what you bring in. You bring in O'Neill and Tino, and you bring in guys that can hit the ball over that short porch and right. And they're not – I know it's not the old stadium, but it's still the same configurations kind of. You just got to do the right thing for this team. I thought Peraza came on toward the end. Hopefully that means that he'll be a little more confident coming in. I thought Volpe had a solid rookie season. I know it wasn't spectacular, but it was okay. Wells is going to be the guy because who are we going to play over him? I mean, the other guy's a journeyman, so who gives a crap? Montez, good riddance. Rodon's here for a while. Hopefully he's better than he's been.
It can't be worse.
Severino, who knows what we're going to get there. Germán, hopefully he doesn't beat anybody anymore. I mean, what the hell's going on? I mean, should have been a better rotation. I want a power bat, power lefty bat, and a closer. I get that. I'll feel all right with this team. Just a little disappointed in the way the game went. G.
And by the way, Philly's just moved on. They polished them off. For the Mets, I want Diaz back healthy by spring training. I'm glad they didn't try to rush him back. I'm glad they didn't do any of that. I want him back here healthy. The Mets need to go get another starting pitcher, at least one to go with Senga, at least one, maybe two. It could be a bigger starter. Yeah, maybe a one or two, you know, a type one, type two starter, maybe a 3-4 starter, but they got to go get two starting pitchers. And Kev, do you see any position that you think they really need to go out and get right now? I mean, a lot of these young kids came up, Mauricio, Beatty, Vientos, you know, any position specifically at this moment? We're going to get into it, obviously, in the offseason, but right up front.
They've got flexibility. They need another bat, whether it's a DH, whether it's an outfielder, whether it's a third baseman. I don't care. With a guy like McNeil, who you can play in the outfield or second base, you know, he's a very good defensive player either position. So it gives you the flexibility. Does Marte come back? You know, he was hurt all year. Is he 35 and on the decline? Or was this just a year that you write off because of the groin issues after last year? He's not having surgery this offseason. Can he strengthen and come back and be able to contribute 120 games next year? You don't know. You can't plan for Marte to be back next year. If he comes back healthy, it's a bonus. And it could be a big bonus. But like I said, they've got the flexibility. You know, is Vientos a good enough guy for DH? You know, he played better when he was playing regularly. You know, you saw the power.
Yeah, absolutely.
I felt like the Mets blew at least 5 or 6 games with their middle relief. And I think that's something that's got to be completely upgraded. It might even be more than that. But that's something that has to be upgraded as well.
But Darren, you know, Diaz coming back and being the ninth inning guy moves everybody up a little bit.
Yeah, but the guy that would be moved up to the eighth is Robertson, G, and he's done. I'm just saying. So you don't have an eighth that you count on. I don't think you do on the Mets.
Do you make the move to see if Robertson wants to come back?
I think you do.
You have to. Then if you set up Diaz, Robertson, Raleigh, Ottavino in the seventh type.
And you're fine.
Well, you still need a couple more arms better than the crap that they put out last year.
Well, I mean, everybody else seems to find 100-mile-an-hour young arms that they're pitching in middle relief, except for the Mets, who go for old men.
Yeah. And Kev, last May, I told you, you know who I think the Mets should go get? Jorge Soler. I think he would have been a nice outfielder for you guys. I have to tell you, still right now, I think he's a good option for you guys to go get.
He's a power bat.
Yep.
Couple of the quick baseball points, guys. Gabe Kapler fired before the season's over. That was pretty interesting. They didn't even let him manage the last season. They must have really pissed somebody off. Arias, first guy to win batting titles in opposite leagues in back-to-back seasons. Not something that usually happens. Usually the guy stays on the team when he wins a batting title.
Yep.
Not when you're a Twin. And then finally, sad to say, Tim Wakefield passed. 57 years old, very young. For passing with brain cancer. You know, listen, knuckleballer, obviously gave up the home run to Boone in 03, which is a big Yankee moment, but at the same point in time, always a likable player. Sad to see Tim pass on.
The last knuckleballer that we may ever see. I mean,
pretty much.
But before we get to NFL picks, Kev, 2 minutes on Drew Holiday at all? Your son happy about this?
Oh, he was very happy about the trade. Obviously bringing in a superstar type player, you know, a point guard, you know, a two-way guard, you know, the fact that he plays such good defense, gives him the depth that they needed. He was the only part of the trade he was sad to give up was Williams, just because they still have a little bit of lack maybe for big men. I mean, they've got Porzingis, they've got Horford. They need maybe one more guy, you know. Well, who knows what veteran's going to take a minimum just to come and chase a championship. I think, you know, set the Celtics up. It's the Celtics, the Bucks, the Sixers. You know, that East, the top of the East is packed.
That's it. Yeah, absolutely. Agreed.
But what do we think about the Knicks not doing anything, guys?
They're going to be relegated to battling for the playing spot, I think. You know, they're going to come back with a very similar team. Well, they did do it. They brought in
Dante, the big ragu, Dante DiVincenzo.
You know, they're trying to recreate that Villanova lineup.
Hey, listen, I get it. It's just that the rich get richer in the NBA, and if you don't go for the superstar, somebody else takes them.
Yeah.
Well, listen,
and the Knicks don't have the superstar, and they're gonna be, you know, like I said, they're a playoff team. Whether they get that fifth or sixth seed, or they're in the playoff, they're making the playoffs.
No doubt. The good thing about this Knicks team is they have the flexibility that the next big guy that's available, they're going to be in the short list of teams that are going to be in the running for the one of these guys. And that's that in the NBA, that's what swings you from a good team to a very good team to where you're in the 1, 2, 3, 4 spot and can actually make some noise in the playoffs. So, all right, it is time. NFL picks, week 5. Kevin, 6-6. Darren, 8-4. Gino, an abysmal 2-10 going into week 5. Kev, you are in the second place. Darren, you have the T spot. You have the honors at 8-4. Start us off.
All right. A weird week for me here. I'm going to start off with Atlanta laying 2.5 against Houston. I think Atlanta covers at home. I think they find a way. Houston's coming off the big win. Atlanta coming off the big loss. I think Atlanta runs the ball down Houston's throat a little bit, wins a very low-scoring game, wins the game by a field goal. I'm going to take the Falcons. I like Philly laying 4 against the Rams, Gino. I took your pick. I took Kevin's pick. I think Philly's just better than the Rams right now. And if Stafford's just banged up against the pass rush from the Colts, I think that the Eagles might really tee off on them. Third one, Kevin, I'm going to leave it for you. I'm going to take Jacksonville +5.5 against Buffalo. I think Jacksonville got to stay in England for 2 weeks. I think that this game will be much closer than people think. I think just like I thought last week, I thought Buffalo probably put up too many points on Miami and things went too easily. They lose their start, cornerback and White this week. I think that the game's much closer. Buffalo might escape, but I think Jacksonville covers the 5.5. So I'm going to take Atlanta, Philly, and Jacksonville.
All right. Kev, over to you.
So I guess you're leaving me the Jets.
I did because I took another one. I saw your expression when I took Philly, and I had to leave you the Jets. I felt bad.
Yeah, Philly was my backup in case you took the Jets. I didn't think you were going to take Philly. But anyway, yeah, I'm going to take the Jets, laying 1.5 at Denver. This is a game they have to win. We talked about it during the Jet talk. They have to win. I'm going to take the points. The point and a half there, and they're going to go out there and win. The second game, this team's been very competitive. They're playing at home. They're getting points at home. The Cardinals getting 3 points. I'm not sure if it's gone up to a half or down to 2.5, but they're getting 3 at home against the Bengals, who just look so beat up. Joe Burrow looks like he's hurting too much. I mentioned T. Higgins likely out. Still 3? All right. So I'm taking the Cardinals +3. And my third game, a bounce back after a shellacking last week in the division matchup against a team that just looked so bad last week, and they are bad. I'm taking Miami laying the 11 at home against the Giants.
Very good. Darren, I am going head-to-head with you in 2 games, so it is odd for this week.
So you took Houston, did you?
I did. I like the way Buffalo's playing. They put 48 up in Miami. They're putting a 30 spot up on Jacksonville, and I don't think Jacksonville's going to score 30 points. I'll take Buffalo -5.5. The second one is I am taking Houston +2.5 at home, on the road against the Falcons. Stroud has something going with this team. I like it. I do not have any faith in Desmond Ridder leading this team down the field right now. If they're not handing the ball off, they have a problem. I'm taking Houston -2.5. And my third pick, I'm taking the Lions -9.5 against Carolina. Carolina moving the opposite way. it's a rebuild year. They're dealing with Bryce Young. Is he healthy? Is he not healthy? Looks like he's playing. I'm still taking Detroit minus the 9.5. They're starting to get it going. I like the way they're rolling right now, so that's where I'm going. Week 5 picks NFL. Sports Kings of King of Queens.
So if you're smart, you'll know that Gino and I will probably split and lose our third game. Just the way it works. Anyway, so just before we wrap up, guys, anything else before we wrap up? We're going to be putting our division series picks on Facebook. So we'll be doing that for all four baseball series, and we'll get more into baseball a little bit next week as the series start moving along a little bit. But we are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren here with Gino, here with Kevin, talking about the wonderful and wacky world of sports. You know, baseball was over early. Football looks like it could be over early if the two teams don't turn it around quickly. But please download our podcast anywhere you can get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, whether it be a TuneIn, whether it be Spotify or wherever. You know, we post things on Facebook. Like, share. Please share. Let more and more people see our stuff. Let's try to get more people involved. Tell us your opinions. Tell us what you want to hear and what you don't want to hear. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.